Greetings and welcome to the Superstars Radio Network. I'm Sonny Fox. Tonight, an extraordinary evening with David Bowie, recorded at David's apartment high atop the busy streets of New York City. We covered quite a range of subjects, too, from Ziggy Stardust to fascism in England to recent trips to Kenya he's made. And, of course, the motion picture part of his life. And we'll include some tracks from his forthcoming album, Stage 2, in the program. Should be a very entertaining 1 hour. So sit back. We'll be right back after a brief pause when the Superstars Radio Network continues. And now the Superstars Radio Network proudly presents An Evening with David Bowie. The entire conversation started out with David explaining some of his recent changes, musical and otherwise.
Well, what really happened is that up until Station to Station, what I've been working on, or working with more than anything else, was creating characters and environments on albums and then portraying them on stage. And I just got to a point where I was getting bored with my writing style. And I wanted to get back to Europe and develop some new methods of writing, do different ways of writing. So when I got back here, I got in touch with Eno, who I'd wanted to work with for years. And we still had the same ideas about music and what it could do, what it should do. And so we collaborated on that, on the first album. Not really as an album, we didn't expect to get anything. We were really excited when we had some very good material. And we sort of just lumped it together and I called it Low. I'd always been into what would be termed, I suppose, neo-avant-garde stuff. In England has always spawned that kind of attitude, I think it's been, especially in London. Ever since the days of Kevin Ayers and all those guys, and Gong, David Allen, I've been interested in how remote that you can get with traditional methods of writing. But it hadn't occurred to me that I should actually sort of take the plunge and try and involve myself. I was very cautious about getting into deep water in areas that I didn't feel that I was competent. But I was given a shoulder to lean on with Brian Eno. And he convinced me that it was worth my while doing what I felt that I would like to do. I mean, it was received with caution when it came out. I didn't expect otherwise. I mean, I just certainly didn't expect people to embrace it with open arms as the long-lost new language of music. And I realized that I might be alienating a lot of people who had maybe only recently got into the idea that I change from record to record. I gathered a whole lot of new people listening to me at the Young American stage, which I was worried about because I hoped that they didn't expect that that was it, you know, and that I was going to continue from there, and that's what I was. So I knew I'd lose a few of them on the way.
Yeah. Well, your current, I mean, your realistic lifestyle, has that surfaced? Is that the point where it surfaced the most?
Yeah, how I've existed for the last 2 years has been as a traveler. I've spent some time in Japan. And then, obviously, I recorded the two Iggy albums and my two albums, new albums, in Berlin at the Hansa by the Wall studios. And I spent some time in just south of Cambodia, in Thailand. And I've just recently got back from Kenya. I just came here from Kenya. And I took a straightforward corny safari.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But they still carry things on their heads and...
I spent a little while, literally a few hours, with the Maasai tribe in Maasai Mara, which is western Kenya, just on the border of Tanzania.
Obviously, it must have been a lot of music in
Yeah,
Kenya.
Yeah, and it was...
a lot of percussion?
Absolutely, but I didn't actually go for the purpose of really listening to the music too much. I went to really look at the lifestyle of people, especially the Maasai tribe. They interested me very much, and I wasn't disappointed at all.
What was it about them?
Well, they've been living their particular way for at least untouched for at least about 800 years. I mean, it hasn't changed at all. And it took a long time to get permission to get to a village. I had to find a Maasai who spoke English, who worked in that area, who would get me into the village, because they're not particularly prone to white men, so yeah. It's very hard to get to see them. And I was fortunate enough to find a young guy who took me in. And they were very, very wary, very cautious of me in the beginning. But after a little while, they don't even speak Swahili. They still speak Maasai. And they're cow herders. I mean, they deal with cattle. They consider that all cattle in all over the world belongs to them.
All of it?
Yeah. So it's, they once upon a time they had a reputation for cattle raiding because all cattle belong to them because God gave them cattle.
Well, there must have been some...
they're very warlike, right?
Must have been some force driving it down. That's an extreme.
Yeah.
How may that surface in the future, or will it at all?
Oh, it's predictable that it will. Yeah, I intend going back as well. I haven't finished there. I had to come here, sort of break up my stay there.
Did you do any recording there by any chance?
I didn't find any facilities available. There's one studio in Nairobi that I didn't get to see.
I just meant like on a cassette or something.
No, not this time. I wanted to understand what I was seeing and what I was dealing with before I was presumptuous enough to start recording it. You know, so I wanted to make more stringent investigations about. There's a lot of other tribes there that I didn't know very much about until I got there. The Giriami tribe, one of the most musical tribes. But I didn't get much. I saw them once, but I didn't get much chance. And I saw them playing, which was spectacular.
The low album seemed as if it was, looked as if it was deliberately. One side was packed with potential hits. I mean, really, there was...
Well, it wasn't. That was.
It looked too obvious. In other words, there was some this incredible commercial material on there.
Very odd stuff.
But the other side was complete.
It was fairly audacious, the first side. it was not written in that order, obviously. The stuff evolved of its own accord in a very different order to that. But I just took an arbitrary decision to put all fast stuff on one side and slow stuff on another for no other reason than that. I thought, well, I'll keep all the accessible stuff on one side and the less accessible stuff on another side and leave it up to people to pick on the side they want to play.
Now, we're speaking to David Bowie, if people just tuned in, and someone told me, of course, many things were said about you, but someone told me that 1 month it may be main man and power and structure and manipulation of the consciousness, and the next day you're Greta Garbo, you know, forget it, take care of me, I'd rather see you next Tuesday. Do you go through... extreme changes?
No, I don't... artistically, yes, of course, but what... I confused many people, and I certainly didn't help, because I refused to explain. Until now, because I'm no longer playing characters. But when I wrote the characters and their environments for the different albums, like Halloween Jack or Thin White Duke, Led Insane, Ziggy Stardust, I used to take the characters off the stage with me if I had to be interviewed or be put in front of media of any type. I would talk in their terms. I very rarely talked as David Bowie.
Again, An Evening with David Bowie.
So you're getting into more musical expression, a little less image expression.
Yes.
And
yes, I'm not creating narrative form albums at the moment. As I said, it started off as experimental work, but I've had such a good time and I developed such enthusiasm for what we were doing that I can see an extension of the way that I'm writing for some time to come. Until the initial spark of enthusiasm leaves it, and then, of course, I'll move on from there. But at the moment, I'm very excited about this process of writing.
It's getting more orchestral, it seems like, and yet more electronic.
Yeah, there's a combination. My usage of electronics is somewhat different to many other people's. I don't wish to reproduce what's already been done. I don't want to reproduce violin sounds. I'd much rather use the synthesizer as a texture. And if I need a sound that I haven't heard in my head, then I require the assistance of the synthesizer to give me a texture that doesn't exist. If I want a guitar sound, I use a real guitar. But then I might mistreat it by putting it through the synthesizer afterwards and deforming its sound.
And there was a piece on side two of the Heroes album where the resonance of the piano bass notes is quite sufficient.
Yes, yes, it was an organic sound set against a synthesized horn section, a fanfare, trumpet fanfare. It retains a human quality. Well, it becomes completely electronic, I think it misses the point. In fact, it's a bit old-fashioned. My wish is to encapsulate what I see around me, the environment, and the time, with music. Once upon a time, theatre to a greater degree than now. I'm a little less interested in the theatrics of presentation. But definitely now, make paintings or take photographs of this time slot so that if I could look back at my work from 1980, I would like to see the 70s through my eyes, like a series of paintings. That's why I'm doing it, really.
The second half of An Evening with David Bowie.
You referred to a lot of the social climate and whatnot of England. Your ties are quite strong there, yeah?
The older I get, the less ties I have anywhere, it seems. I had always thought that by this stage I would be settled down somewhere with a house and ground and everything, but I never got round to doing that. I still can't see a day when I'll need a house, so that's still up in the air.
Have you any idea what's going on? I mean, could you capsulize what's going on there now? I know the social climate in England is affecting its music right now.
There's a very negative aspect in England at the moment, which has reared its ugly head, which I thought very predictable. In the nature of fascism, which is the last thing one would ever have associated with England. But there's now a party there called the National Front, which is the fourth strongest party in the country, which only recently, I felt, people actually would own up that it was a Nazi party. You know, and then it sort of crept into the papers gradually, and it was just the National Front, that's all. It occurred to me that nobody had mentioned that it was a fascist party.
Was it always fascism the answer to economic failure?
I don't think it's an answer to anything at all. It's an answer to an idiot's dream, but that's about it.
Do you see it actually taking some roots or gathering some influence to music?
I don't think so. I think that there is, they have no leadership. If they found leadership of a charismatic nature, there would be very big problems. But they don't.
If a man of your intelligence decided to side with that element,
That's, yes. In fact, I used the Thin White Duke one time, which unfortunately backfired a bit in England. But I tried to, as usual, theatrically show what could happen. And in some way it did some good, because for the first time it brought to the front that it was a fascist party. It hadn't been really written about as such until then. It was still just, you know, nice and politely the National Front. There's a sort of a Holocaust emotionally happening in Europe, and one can only just try and describe it rather than project any future for what's going to happen. I think I've always thought that an artist should remain apolitical, and if anything, if there are aspects that he doesn't agree with, then to caricature them more than anything else. Mm-hmm. So this is what I've always tried to do. Yeah.
And which can easily be tied into the theme of your motion picture, because it's about a man who's traveling a great distance.
Yeah.
That motion picture was... how did you receive it?
I left out trying to define the thing, apart from my own personal characterization, and as I... It was hard to... understand what Nick wanted to achieve with Newton's character. I could only use my own terms of reference. So my characterization is really immaterial. What I enjoyed about it was the actual process of making the film from a potential director's point of view, which is what I want to do. I only saw the film once after it had been finished, and it was a nice film. I liked it very much. But I didn't really develop any opinion about it. Working with Nick was a great experience. And the...
Did he make you look good?
I guess that's down to Tony Richmond, who was the chief cameraman, who is quite a romantic as a cameraman. Well, Nick is as well. Nick is a high romantic. The equation of man against vast areas of ground is one of his chief obsessions. Which was also brought up in Walkabout. I don't know whether you ever saw that film.
I haven't, unfortunately, no, I haven't.
Which I still think is Nick's best film. It's absolutely incredible.
It's the nature of your mind to know everything you're doing thoroughly. You have sort of it's not a fear really, but a dislike for, it seems, doing something you don't fully comprehend.
So motion pictures was quite a stimulus.
I felt in an odd position. I mean, it hadn't been for a long time that I'd been required to do the things that I was supposed to do, then shut up and sit down, you know, right. without taking an active... I didn't exert my own views on the thing very much at all. I really wanted to put myself in the hands of somebody else to see how a director works with an actor, because I wish to do maybe 4 or 5 films under different directors as an actor, to know how an actor reacts to a director before I can possibly direct another actor.
Have you spent time on the set watching?
I spent all my time that I wasn't working, just
hanging out.
Mm-hmm. Watching, yeah, I learned a hell of a lot.
There's a lot of the character, well, obviously it was you. I mean, or by.
I don't know. I think Nick is also very good at casting. he had the film, and the character in the original book had strong resemblances to the kind of isolationist characters that I'd been producing. So it was a fairly sort of accurate piece of casting. It had credibility from the moment go. The same as Jagger had perfect credibility for performance. There were lots of parallels with both careers, the film career and Jagger's career. Nick doesn't juxtapose as much as I would have done. I would have probably put somebody in it completely out of character with that.
Like who, for instance? Who do you have cast as the Man of Felt Earth?
Someone like Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I would see, if I started making films, I would make them on a very straightforward narrative level. They would be fairly regular conservative style films. I'm not...
Your Hollywood picture, you mean?
It certainly wouldn't be a Hollywood style picture. It would be far more of a European experience and far more intimate, pastoral kind of miniature thing.
A lot of...
Very much the antithesis of what I've been doing on stage in the past. I would zoom right in. Be a micro world rather than a macro world.
There's going to be a lot of back to technical things again, a lot of camera influence. You seem to be fascinated by the lens.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Do you want to get behind the camera all the time and make sure the frame?
I don't think I'll ever adapt to being that much of a technician. Virtuosity is not my forte at all. I'm primarily a visionist and an ideas person, and a conceptualist, really. I'm not a I don't have a technical attribute in my brain anywhere.
Is that a cause?
I have a problem driving cars, let alone adjusting lenses.
I think the union though for focusing. the other one handles it. You think you're an artist. So does this happen to? Is there a lot of problems with follow through? I mean, do you really race ahead of yourself sometimes?
Yes. I have over the past couple of years, I've been able to put some brakes on when I do and not be over-eager. And that comes with age, I think, more than anything else. The ambitious young man has got all kinds of ideas flowing around. He has trouble sort of disciplining himself. I think that comes with time, really.
Are there any notable David Bowie extravaganzas you're really into for about 3 weeks?
Diamond Dogs was just... I spent God knows how much money on the most incredible set, and I was supposed to go all over America with it. And I got to Los Angeles, and I was bored stiff with it, and I completely threw the set away and came back with a completely different show. I mean, I came back, I wanted to get into that Warholism of Polaroiding things, so I Polaroid, that was Young America, I came back with Young Americans, or what was to be the germ for Young Americans, which is my photograph of American music at that time. Because I was fed up with Diamond Dogs, I'd done it, and I gave everybody so many headaches. I said, I'm not going back with it. I've done the show now. If it works, it's out of date. I don't know.
Yeah.
But this is in the middle of a tour, and they were supposed to be selling the entire show on this spectacular set. And all the way back through America, the kids had come, there's no set, no nothing. And then I was singing soul music.
And now, once again, an evening with David Bowie.
I'm very impatient about, especially on touring. I find it hard to, after about the first handful of gigs, I find it hard to concentrate on doing another 60. Really? Having to reproduce approximately the same thing every night.
I mean, America's a victim of your whims?
Oh no, I'd never be that presumptuous.
Diamond Dogs tour, could I ask you to interpret that as a really the last extension of trying to be bizarre?
No, I think it was just another sort of very English apocalyptic kind of view of our city life. It just coincided with the first economic disasters in New York, and it came off from there. It was had obvious inspirations from the Orwellian Holocaust trip, and you know, it was pretty despondent. My point is to communicate for myself first and foremostly, and if I have a public that was willing to follow me and keep going with me, that's great. But if I start losing them or dropping them off, there's nothing much I can do about that. I didn't start writing for that reason.
Would you direct other people if you had the opportunity in films?
Oh yes, I couldn't direct myself. I have no ambition to direct myself. I mean, if I started directing, it would be solely with other actors, with real actors.
Or Dustin Hoffman?
No, I don't think I'd... Now, that was an illustration for that last film.
Though. Yeah.
Yes, we don't have him yet. I don't even have a very firm idea of what story that I'd be filming first. I mean, I'm going to wait until I know more about filming before I do that. I guess it's hard for me to decide which are my professional ambitions and which are my just personal ambitions. They sort of tend to merge into one thing. Producing a new band called Devo, that I think a very interesting band.
Devo?
Devo, yeah. They come from Ohio. Akron.
The rubber capital of the world.
They are fantastic. They really are interesting.
You mentioned at the beginning of this program you had quite a following in Cleveland. Have you realized the wealth of talent in the Midwest?
Well, they got Devo.
Right.
They are quite an amazing new wave band. They're really... You're not going to be in New York on Monday or Tuesday.
I may.
They're playing in town at Max's.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll probably introduce them. I'd like to. I mean, I have to ask them if they'll agree to that.
Oh, I'm sure they
will. I think they're really sweet.
And will we see you on the screen again?
A film about Egon Schiele. He was a German expressionist painter about 1910. A pupil of Gustav Klimt.
Who's directing that?
Clive Donner, who made The Caretaker. I think he's best known for that over here. And it's a very straight, romantic film. Again, very straightforward narrative, very different from the last thing I made. Again, non-musical. Europe, London, Paris, and Vienna take place in.
Sounds like a charter travel place, one of the famous places in the world. Fantastic, and you'll be probably on the set every day, soaking it in.
Oh, yeah. I like Clive very much. He's a very nice person, and quite brilliant.
And what about, speaking of leading ladies, do you have any current influences down to a social level again? Have you been keeping company, or are you just drifting by yourself out of your
Just with the mess I.
Well, then I'll leave you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to An Evening with David Bowie on the Superstars Radio Network. I'm your host, Sonny Fox. Thanks for joining us, and join us in the future for more radio specials from the Superstars Radio Network. Good evening.